I've noticed that a lot of products have aspects of AI. You know, most ages OpenAI went up, but some sort of AI sprinkled into them. And obviously, AI is a huge topic these days. So, how are you adapting to this new age, and how has it affected the development of your products?
If you look at, Document 360, it's a perfect product for the current AI trend, what's going on. So I keep telling within the team, it's like, what happened to Zoom when COVID hit, right? Because all of a sudden the company boomed because the environment was perfectly suitable for a company like Zoom. Everybody wants Zoom, and then, they just the exponential growth, what we have seen with Zoom, and today everybody use Zoom. We are seeing similar opportunity for Document 360 and the Zen AI stuff, what's happening now. Because if you look at it now, people didn't pay too much attention to their knowledge base, or, they're documenting their processes before. It's all over the place. But today, every company want to, because if you look at it, for Gen AI to work, it needs to pick up data from somewhere underneath. If you don't have that underlying knowledge base, or your product documentation, or internal process documentation, your onboarding documentation, and whatever, all the knowledge, if it's not there, your Gen AI stuff is not going to work. So it's in that context, Document 360 is perfectly well positioned, and we are adding lots and lots of AI capabilities in the product. For example, search is a good example. Before Gen AI, our search used to work like a Google search. If you go to docs.document360.com, our documentation site, if you search before, it would have given you like four articles, similar to how Google would have given you like 10 links and say, you go find out what you're looking for. But today, if I go and search, how do I export PDF? If I ask that question in our search bar, it will tell you, this is how you do it. It digests all the data in your knowledge base, and then it gives you a precise answer. You can imagine, like, we have, for example, Airtable is our customer, Midjourney is our customer. They have millions of users coming to their documentation. And when they search something like that, how do I do this backup in Airtable? It will give you an answer straight away. If that answer is not precise, it used to be like a direct support ticket to Airtable. They'll send an email, support email, and you can imagine the cost and the user experience, the customer experience. They need to wait for 2 days, and the whole cycle will take 2 days. So in that context, you can imagine the importance of having a good knowledge-based product. And we are kind of in a forefront now, leading in all possible ways and growing pretty fast when it comes to Document 360. SEO is a bigger topic, right? If you look at SEO, everybody got website, right? But you need to do some search engine optimization for Google to understand your thing better and start ranking. Imagine the same context now in Gen AI world. Okay, Gen AI is going to give you answers, but for it to pick up the answers and give it to you from your source, you need to do some optimization on your knowledge base so that Gen AI can understand your stuff very well. It's exact analogy of SEO Google, and now what optimization you are doing for Gen AI to pick up your stuff so that it will recommend. If I go and search, hey, tell me what is the best knowledge-based product in the market, and I'm sure Document 360 will come there from OpenAI, because you tuned your articles for you to, it's a Gen AI friendly, and that is the kind of innovations what we're doing in the product.
So you've clearly nailed it when it comes to scaling your product. And we have a lot of viewers and clients who are at that stage where they need to change how they operate in order to facilitate the growth of their company. What are some of the setbacks or challenges you've faced, and what are some crucial aspects to be aware of to scale correctly as a SaaS business?
Yeah, I won't call it a setback. Setbacks are normally, when you lose some key resources, or when it's a struggle. But scaling is not a setback. Scaling is all about, how do you move forward step by step. It's a continuous learning, and then adapting to whatever is working. A lot of times, the mistake a lot of founders do is, scaling multiple channels together, going and doing multiple things together. Like, a lot of times, you don't have bandwidth. Any company, even for us with, say, 150 people working on Document 360, and when you cut it down, your marketing team maybe only like, you know, 20-25 people. With the 20-25 people, you can only do so much. You cannot, you know, compare yourself to, you know, Salesforce and Dropbox and, you know, like those large companies, and you cannot do what they are doing because they have much more bandwidth and capital. And so you need to see what's working for you. And you think about, you know, what's going to be your next stage, right? You are in, say, for example, like 1 million revenue. Like, see what are all the things that will take you to 5 million. That's all you need to think. You know, don't think beyond that. So what are all the low-hanging fruits for you to reach that 5 million mark? It's very counterintuitive. You cut down everything and then focus on only one or two items that will help you to get there. But you are very hard to tune your mind to do that way. Your tendency will be, okay, I'll do this, I'll do that, I'll do that, because you think doing multiple things will take you there, but it's actually, you know, trimming down and doing like only one or two things extremely well is what will take you there.
I'd love to hear more about some of the metrics that you focus on when it comes to business growth. What should people keep an eye on?
Sales fixes all the problem. That is the simple statement. So, you know, like if you're your revenue is growing, that's a good sign. You need to focus on only very few metrics. You know, like the NRR is in a SaaS business. NRR is the one key, net revenue retention is one key metric you need to keep an eye. How much your expansion and, you know, like new revenue is contribute minus churn is keeping you above. Otherwise, you know, any, even if you're negative with it by a small margin, say your NRR is only like 90% or something, it may look like 10%, but you will eventually die. That's what it's saying. You know, like you leave it running for a few years, you'll die. So you need to make sure your NRR is above that 100% mark and keep an eye on churn. Churn is a real challenge for any SaaS businesses. For that, again, people look at it in wrong places. You need to look at it all the way from how you acquire customers, because a lot of times churn will turn into, there are two types of churns, right? Voluntary and involuntary. So one you can control, one you cannot control. The one you cannot control, you can't do anything about it because, you know, the business is going out of money or, you know, like shutting down, all those things are out of control. But things what you can control, in the first place, you wouldn't have hired the right customer in the beginning, so that those are the ones who churn. So it's better to, you know, like take a look and see like whether you acquired the right kind of customers. A bunch of product metrics like NPS, that is from an engineering perspective, it's important to measure whether the word of mouth, people, do they really, will they miss the product, you know, like take down a feature or shut down the product. It's good to measure NPS and try to keep it around that 7 or 8 range if possible. Yeah,
I can imagine all this really demands a lot from you as a leader. I always talk about the shift and change that founders need to make as their company starts to scale.
Founder to scale themselves as they grow. For example, when I started, it was just me. And then today you're running 300 people company. At a different stage, you need to have different mindset and different leadership skills. And running a 1-person company is different from 5-people company to 50 to 100 to 200 to 300. And there are, you know, maybe 1,000 and above requires a different skill set. So you need to make sure you're keeping up to date. For me, I personally have a lot of mentors, and luckily I have a lot of good friends in the similar kind of growth, kind of a founder mindset. We all grown together in the last 10 years. So I got a good network of mentors and founder friends who can help me even this week. Like, I'm trying to address a couple of challenges, and then, you know, I messaged a few of my friends. I can pick up the right people for the right problem. So if I have something on the product, I know where to go, maybe something on the sales, whom to contact, those kind of things. So that kind of helps. And also growing your internal team is also, and the internal leadership is also super critical, because the same principle, you know, like you are a head of engineering at when you are like 40 people is different from head of engineering at 150 people. Like, they need to have a level of experience. Sometimes you can home grow the talent, but sometimes it's not possible to home grow the promote somebody internally to that position. Okay. What happens is, as the company grows, if you're trying to promote somebody internally, as long as they've grown along and they also got the potential to, you know, like run a 100 people company, you can promote them. But the company's ability to bring external talent increases as you scale, because you have more funding and then you'll be able to find people who have done it before, rather than, you know, like experimenting yourself, and the failure rate may be higher. It's easy sometimes to, you know, like bring somebody who has done it. And the other thing I will say is, even if you bring right people who have done it before, they still need a lot of mentoring and a lot of nurturing to embed them into the team. Because whenever you bring like a top people, there will always be disruptions. You know, like you're raising doubts inside a lot of people internally. They need to start trusting that person. Until the transition happens, until the bonding happens, it's very important as a founder to make sure you're communicating enough so that the bonding builds up over a period of time. So yeah, I think these are some of the challenges what I've addressed over the last 10 years or so. Yeah,
that's it. Thank you so much for coming. This was really great, really insightful. Where can people find you if you want to get in touch or finally something extra? What are your favorite books? What are you reading now? And what are some books you find yourself, you know, just going back and back to and leaning on?
Yeah, sure. I think the book I'm reading at the moment is called The Good Strategy, Bad Strategy. I haven't completed it, but I read only like halfway through, but it's a really, really good book. It discusses about the difference between a good strategy and bad strategy. I think it's a very popular book. I can't remember the author name from top of my head, but it's one of those New York bestsellers and millions of copies out there. And the book I really liked and probably very practical, it's called Effortless. Again, I forgot the name. Greg something. So it's basically, you know, like it's very easy to search and find. It's the concept is basically, you know, like every scenario you encounter, you will face five different options, right? You'll have five different options on the table or more, right? How do you pick up the one that will be less effort but gives you maximum return? You know, you need to continuously think in that mindset. That's the crux of the book. And there are so many examples and every scenarios, you know, how do you do that, etc. Yeah, I think that's one of the good books. Yeah, LinkedIn is the only place. I stopped using all other Twitter and Facebook and everything else. So the LinkedIn is where you can find me. And that's one place where I put a lot of content as well. Like I do keep sharing. I run a series called Founders Thought. I post small nuggets of, you know, like one topic every week, basically, like what I learned. We discussed quite a lot, but I just take one topic and speak for 5 minutes. And probably people might find it helpful if they are, you know, building a company. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks for tuning in. If you found this episode helpful, make sure to subscribe to our channel for more insights on building and running a productive development team. You can also subscribe to our newsletter. You'll find the link in the description. Join other founders. What we share there is not just everything you see here on YouTube, but also in-depth talks that we give that we can share publicly. So that is an insider's only thing in our newsletters that comes from time to time, and workbooks and things like more informational resources to help you shape your development process. So again, links in the description. And if you're ready to scale your software business, book a call with us today. Just talk to me, learn how you can leverage senior development teams, how you can recruit and hire the best people you've ever had, as well as experienced fractional CTOs and CPOs to make better tech and product decisions, streamline your development process, and, you know, get more done, right? Thanks for watching. See you in the next episode. Thank you.